Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Beyond the Pack by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderle. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. Maggie woke to the smell of crepes and the sight of water-damaged ceiling tiles. Only the fact that she heard an inordinate amount of traffic through the poorly framed window beside her bed reminded her that she was in Montreal, not Joseph's Landing. Also, the only place that did crepes in Joseph's Landing didn't do them as well as the ones she could smell. The benefits of being somewhere French. Or arguably French, depending on which Canadian you talk to. And it didn't matter whether your chosen interviewee was Anglo or Franco. Anyway, she groaned as she got up, back cracking and muscles complaining as much as the shitty mattress and bed frame she'd slept on. "Smells good," she called, then coughed and cleared her throat. There had to be mold in the ensuite. She was never this gummed up overnight. Pharaoh didn't answer, or if she did, Maggie didn't hear it, which would have been impressive given that her shifter senses were more acute after her brush with the shifter curse. While it hadn't affected her like the others, she'd been worried when she'd only been able to smell the pizza delivery from the front door instead of down the street, although it turned out the pizza had been cold, so. Man, sometimes I forget how good you are at avoiding what you don't want to think about. Her brother's voice sounded in her ear, whispering from whatever corner of her mind his incorporeal soul inhabited. Even the Russians would have to give you a perfect 10 this morning. Fuck off, Matt. Maggie continued to grumble as she pulled a hoodie over her well-worn Muni t-shirt. It read, "Magical University of New York. Where there's a will, there's a will-o-a-mock." Dumbest slogan ever. She padded down the threadbare carpet to the living room, where she saw Pharaoh grabbing paper plates from the cupboards in the galley kitchen off the apartment door. "Morning."
"Morning. I got us a dozen plain crepes and a handful of toppings, plus coffee."
The Naga gestured beside her, indicating a pair of takeout coffee cups. As she leaned in to grab one of the coffees, Maggie noticed the scaling on the backs of Pharaoh's hands was more evident than usual.
"You okay?"
"Hmm?"
Pharaoh glanced down at her hands.
"Oh, climate's different, that's all. I need to find an apothecary that stocks the herb I need for my hand lotion. Have to tweak the formula."
"I see." Maggie waited for her friend to get herself a plate of crepes before doing the same, filling one of hers with berries, one with cream cheese, and one with leftover scrambled eggs and bacon from the day before.
"Why do you hide the scaling, anyway?"
"Hard to pass off as anything else?"
Pharaoh sat on the couch, which sank almost to the floor as she did, and grunted in frustration before she continued.
"I don't like questions. Not many Nagas around."
"You could say it was a fancy tattoo,"
Maggie pointed out, joining her. "Ink artists can do some seriously cool stuff these days."
"Then I'd have to say where I got it and whether it hurt, and since the colors sometimes shift."
Pharaoh shook her head.
"Much easier to cover it up. I'd rather be known for my work and my wit than my skin, thanks."
"Fair enough." They ate their breakfast, Pharaoh pointedly ignoring the creaking of the thrift store reject furniture, while Maggie pretended she didn't notice.
"What's the plan?"
Pharaoh eventually prompted. She mopped up lemon juice and sugar with her last bite.
"Other than slumming it in an apartment with more health violations than an abandoned nuclear plant, I mean."
Maggie gave her a dirty look. "It's not that bad." Pharaoh raised her eyes to the ceiling, brought them back down to Maggie, and raised an eyebrow.
"You sure about that?"
"Yes."
"No."
"God damn it, Pharaoh, come on. You know why we couldn't take the other place."
"I do know why, and I still think you're an idiot."
Pharaoh's tone could have curdled the leftover whipped cream on her plate as easily as the lemon juice.
"I'm not taking Shelton's money after everything."
"Oh, Because it's your fault that his estranged son has gone off the deep end into an amoral quest for world domination that's even given his sociopathic mother pause. Maggie's cheeks were brighter than the strawberries she'd eaten. Yes. No. Maybe. I don't know. It felt wrong to take him up on the offer. Unfair. Like I'd be taking advantage of him. Pharaoh rolled her eyes so hard it had to hurt. He offered, Maggie. I didn't ask him. He asked me how the hunt was going, then offered to pay for the better place. Or to make up the difference. I know. Maggie sighed and cast her gaze to the floor, tracing the outline of a stain whose provenance she had no desire to contemplate. I wouldn't have been comfortable, I'm sorry. You know, just because you're hunting down a guy with no morals to speak of doesn't mean you have to become some sort of perfect, pious angel. Matt snarked. A better mattress might mean we're less grumpy in here. Fuck off, Matt. Maggie repeated for the second time that morning, although the sentence was more of a groan than real words. What's he saying? Pharaoh asked. Maggie huffed. That I'm being prissy because Cole's being a royal bastard, essentially? Ah, you're being a reactionary paragon and it's not ringing true. Bingo. He agrees with you, Maggie added. Before either of them could say anything more, she shoved to her feet and started pacing, throwing the paper plate out on her way by the overflowing trash can. We have to track Cole down and stop him, right? That's what you do, right? That's how this works? You do know we're not in a movie, Mags? Or a video game? This isn't your grand destiny. Ugh, Matt, yes, I know my life isn't a movie script. But who else is going to stop him? Maggie turned and paced the other way, not that the room was very big, and growled under her breath. He's a threat to the entire world, and we're the only ones who know.
We're not the only ones, Pharaoh argued. We have allies. We've made quite a few allies over the past year and a bit. She's right. You've got the Bitterfurs, Charlie, Sasha. Hell, as much as you don't want to admit it, Shalton's on your side.
I'm not asking Shalton for help taking down his son, Matt.
Pivot, pace.
Charlie and Sasha, maybe, but not Shalton. And the Bitterfurs have enough to deal with. I'm not asking them.
Charlie and Sasha would be a good idea, Pharaoh mused.
She sat back on the couch and grimaced as it creaked and shifted ominously.
Maggie, this is ridiculous.
It's not like we'll be staying here long anyway, Maggie muttered, running her hands through her hair. We have to find him. We have to find Cole.
And do what exactly?
I don't know, Matt. She dug her fingertips into her scalp, pressing hard against her temples. Then, at Pharaoh's raised eyebrows, she snarled. He said, and do what exactly? And yeah, I don't know. And my God, it was easier when no one knew you were there.
Silence fell. Maggie was breathing hard. Matt held himself awkwardly to the side of her mind, and Pharaoh watched Maggie with her eyebrows still raised.
Okay, then.
The Naga sounded taken aback.
Do you need more?
No, I don't need more coffee.
Maggie cut herself off mid-growl and dropped her hands to her sides as her shoulders slumped.
Maybe I do need more coffee.
Or a better mattress,
Matt put in as gently as he could. Maggie scowled. We don't have money for a better mattress. Her anger was half-hearted.
You're exhausted, Pharaoh pointed out. This is really taking a toll on you.
What is? Maggie snapped. Having my dead brother in my head? Being the only known female shifter on the planet and somehow the reason that my ex-boyfriend is attacking every shifter pack on at least two continents? Needing to take down that ex-boyfriend before he takes over the world and subjugates the entire amagical population? Knowing that the aforementioned ex-boyfriend probably still wants me as his magical empress so he can create the perfect magical bloodline?
having to turn down financial support from said ex-boyfriend's father, even though he feels more like a father to me than my actual dad ever did, still not knowing where my dad is, or even if he's alive. Dealing with the knowledge that Dad ditched not one, but two shifter packs and never bothered to explain anything about shifter culture to my twin brother or me. And that something in there is why my mom drank herself to death. Oh, and did I mention having my dead brother in my head?
Something like that, yeah,
Pharaoh replied.
Maybe we shouldn't be in the same brain anymore.
Matt said it even more quietly than his last comment.
Maybe I need to go.
No, Matt, don't go. Maggie deflated, leaned back against the wall with a smack, and slid down. She hit the floor with a heavy thud and let her head drop, putting her forearms on her bent knees.
I'm sorry I snapped, both of you. None of this is your fault, and I'm being a dick.
Apology accepted,
Pharaoh stated, and Maggie felt Matt's assent.
We still need to do something, Maggie.
Yeah, we do.
She sounded tired. The world's gained a supervillain who's already acting on his plan for world domination. That part wasn't hyperbole.
I'm not sure any of what you said was hyperbole,
Matt cut in grimly.
Shit's bad, Mags.
Shit is indeed bad,
Maggie agreed.
I didn't even get to the part about someone believing he's my fated mate.
We have to figure out something. Pharaoh made a noise, and Maggie looked up to see her staring at the ceiling in utter disgust.
The roof is leaking. It dripped.
We're on the second floor of 5. Maggie's stomach turned as she followed Pharaoh's gaze to the spot of water on the ceiling midway between them and the dripping on the coffee table.
I knew there was water damage, but I didn't think it was currently leaking.
Pharaoh looked down, pulling Maggie's gaze with her, and the two women locked eyes across the table.
There are a lot of somethings we need to figure out, but I think our living arrangements need to be first. Whatever guilt complex you've got going on needs to go.
Maggie pursed her lips. The apartment's a flaming dumpster fire, but
no buts, Maggie.
You gotta sleep,
Matt chimed in.
You can't fight supervillains on no sleep.
Maggie groaned and pressed the heels of her hands into her eyes. Fine. Damn it, I'll figure something out.
Talk to Shelton,
Pharaoh insisted. Okay. I'll call him. She dropped her hands beside her and let her head fall back against the wall with a light thump. Matt, are you remembering what his cologne smells like right now? Because if so, that's a little weird. A knock sounded at the door, and both participants in the conversation, blessed with bodies, jumped.
No, I think he's here,
Matt retorted dryly.
Yeah, I figured that one out, thanks,
Maggie grouched as she got to her feet. Chapter 2. Sure enough, James Shelton was standing there when Maggie opened the door, looking every bit the dapper, rough around the edges, wealthy cowboy vampire he was.
Make a Pinterest board for that, I dare you,
Matt teased her. But she couldn't describe the man any other way. His red and white checked button-down shirt tucked into jeans that fit like they were tailored but had been worn in from work, and his belt buckle was only somewhat smaller than a dinner plate. A Stetson settled on his dark brown hair and tilted down over his dark brown eyes. And fangs glinted in the flickering light of the sketchy apartment building hallway.
Miss St. Clair?
His southern drawl was liltingly polite in a did you really think I wasn't going to find you sort of way?
Mr.
James, she responded, changing course at the flash in his eyes. Come in, please.
Thank you.
She stepped back, he walked in, and she winced as she watched him look the place over. Are you in Montreal for business?
I've got some business everywhere, if I so choose, but no.
He peered at the broken-off trim around the bathroom door.
I'm here with a question for you, and I'd like a straight answer.
Pharaoh caught her eye, and the glare from the Naga was enough to make Maggie swallow hard. Sure, shoot.
Why did you run off?
He didn't look back over his shoulder. Guilt roiled in her gut alongside the crepes.
Tell him the truth,
Matt prodded her. I'm going to, sheesh, she burst out. No, sorry, that was to Matt. I wasn't saying I was going to run off again. She closed her eyes and swiped a hand over her face before meeting Shalton's eyes again. He half whirled in surprise at her exclamation. I felt guilty about Cole. She shoved her hands in her pockets and looked away. You hired me to find your son, and instead I...
You what?
The amusement in his voice made her look up again.
Fell in love with him? Made him turn to the dark side?
The last part was complete with air quotes, and he smiled when she chuckled.
Cole makes his decisions like anyone else, he continued. Am I pleased with how the last year's gone? No, can't say as I am. That's not your fault, Maggie. You didn't make Cole's decisions for him any more than his mother did.
Maggie frowned. She taught him.
Yes, she taught him a lot of what he believes, I'll grant you that.
Shalton nodded and held up a hand to stall Maggie.
You and I both tried to show him a different way, and he chose otherwise. It's past time you stop being silly about this.
She frowned, stung. Stop being silly about... What the hell does that mean?
Damn, someone got up on the wrong side of the bed today.
His eyebrows rose.
Although given what I can see of the furniture you've got, I doubt there is a good side to your bed these days.
You're not wrong, Pharaoh muttered, and rolled her eyes when Maggie glared at her. Shalton continued before Maggie's ire rose further.
I mean, that you're taking on more of the blame here than you deserve. I, on the other hand, haven't been taking on enough.
Okay, now I'm really lost, Maggie said. You've barely been involved in Cole's life. How could any of what he's doing be your fault? Shalton heaved a sigh.
Oh, you don't want me to get started, truly.
He pursed his lips.
Suffice it to say that I now realize both Cirilla and I were trying to play a game with each other, and that game made Cole a pawn. I could have done a great many things differently over the past 2 decades, Miss St. Clair, and maybe it would have changed where we are now. I can't go back and change the past, and I doubt even your powers allow you to do that.
Not quite the way it works, no, Maggie admitted.
I didn't think so.
He sighed again.
Not that I would want to anyway. I'm done playing that game. I might not have Cole back in my life the way I hoped I would, but more of the same won't get me where I want to be.
Where's that? Pharaoh asked. Where do you want to be?
Doing something more with my life than chasing down the woman who wronged the son I never knew and me. I figure stopping a plot to take over the world ought to fit the bill quite nicely.
Pharaoh snorted, and Shalton winked at her before returning his attention to Maggie.
That's why I came to knock down your door. You went and ran off after barely saying goodbye. And Lord knows, if you're hunting down a madman, you need backup.
I have backup, Maggie retorted. I have Pharaoh and Matt and Charlie and Sasha and the shifters and... Stop looking at me like that.
Like what?
Shalton's face was the picture of innocence. She huffed. Like you know me well enough to know that I'm full of shit.
Well, we have shared a few brunches, and you share enough brunches with someone, you get to know them a bit.
He chuckled.
If I know you, I'd say you haven't called Charlie or Sasha. And you've probably already shot down the idea of calling the shifters for help because of what they're going through right now. Also, knowing you, you're probably ripe raring to go off and hunt coal down right this second, with no planning whatsoever. Consequences be damned.
Maggie squirmed. Quit smirking, Pharaoh. The Naga took her hand off her mouth to reveal a perfectly neutral expression that the amusement dancing in her eyes undermined.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
They've got you pegged,
Matt snickered.
Shut up, Matt.
She rubbed her eyes again, feeling more exhausted by the minute. It felt like 9 p.m., although it had barely passed 9 in the morning. We have to move fast, she insisted, looking at Shalton squarely. Cole started the campaign against the shifters almost 6 weeks ago now. It's already been 2 weeks since we broke the curse, and Cirilla said she wouldn't stop him. She's going to try to get him back on her side, so what if...
Cirilla won't move quickly, Shalton cut in. You have time. We have time.
How can you know that? Maggie challenged him.
Because I've been studying her work for over 25 years,
he calmly reminded her.
What exactly did she say to you?
Like I said, she was going to try to get him back on her side. I think her words were align him with my values or something like that. Basically, she didn't agree with how he was doing what he was doing, but she didn't disagree with the goal.
Ends and means,
Pharaoh chimed in.
Hmm.
Shalton thought for a moment.
If that's the case, I suspect she'll take the time to try to get back in his good graces subtly. Convince him that she's on his side. Which means we have time to decide how involved we want to be in this. And I don't suggest being hasty with it.
We haven't all got the luxury of immortality here, Maggie deadpanned. What counts as hasty for a vampire? Shalton laughed.
Let's at least take a few days to get our bearings. I'm a turned vampire, Miss St. Clair. I'm only as old as the date on my birth certificate.
When do you get your first forged birth certificate as a vampire? Matt wondered. Is it like a rite of passage thing?
Here, my child, you are now a true vampire.
Maggie snorted. Matt wants to know when you get your first forged birth certificate. No, come on, say the whole thing. It was funny.
Oh, fine, geez.
Eyes to heaven, she recited Matt's words to Shalton, who chortled.
About the time people start remarking that I resemble those celebrities who never seem to age, I'll bask in the compliments long enough to feel pleased, then deflect the questions, then I'll move elsewhere every couple of decades, eventually becoming a recluse for long enough for everyone to forget about me, and surface again for a few more decades. You know how it goes. Anyway.
His expression sobered, and Maggie's suspicious instincts tweaked. Whatever he was about to say would change the subject to something he didn't like.
How are things going with you and Matt?
The shudders instantly went down over her face.
Fine? Why?
You don't seem happy.
He wasn't quite nervous, but not.
We're fine, she repeated, and crossed her arms.
Thank you. For a second, he looked like he was about to argue the point. Then something caught his eye over her shoulder.
Are you sure I can't talk you into moving somewhere that isn't one inspection away from being condemned?
Quite sure, Maggie said coolly, ignoring Matt's exasperated. But you said you were going to call him, in the back of her head. Again, thank you. Your offer is appreciated, but we'll be fine. He traded a look with Pharaoh that said things Maggie didn't like about their assessment of her mental state. But she had dug in now and knew he could tell.
I'll be in town for a few days if you want to see me,
he said, moving back toward the door.
And Maggie?
She moved aside to let him pass. Yes? He paused beside her, moved his hand as if to put it on her shoulder, and paused again. Then he followed through. laid it on her shoulder, and looked her in the eye.
I might not have a son right now, but I have a daughter. I meant that when I said it.
He walked out without another word, leaving Pharaoh and Maggie, and by extension Matt, in the loud silence. Chapter 3. Running through muck was about as hard when you had four paws as when you had 2 feet. Harder if those paws didn't want to stay paws. The slick mud slid through Maggie's toes as she ran, providing no grip and serving more as a carrier for the sharp bits of ice that remained from the spring thaw, not to mention the endless tiny pebbles and rocks. The pain and discomfort only added to her panic. She had to get to Liam, and she had to get there now. That was why she was sprinting across Bitterfur territory as fast as possible. A battle was going on, and he was in trouble, and she had to get there. Despite providing her with this frantic innate knowledge, the universe did not seem amenable to letting her do so. Every tread felt like needles, and each step felt like it was halfway between paw and foot. Her body was slipping and shifting against her will. Her legs were the wrong length, and her paws were confusingly both hands and feet. Her tail brushed the backs of her thighs, and her ears were both on top of and on the sides of her head. It was madness, pure madness. It felt like growing pains times 1,000, with flashes of what she'd felt from the banshee in Iceland, stuck between worlds, flickering from one to the other, but not all at once. She had to deal with it, because Liam was in trouble, and she'd be damned if she wasn't going to get there to help him. But you can't, came a voice in her head, one she didn't recognize. You can't because you're not yourself anymore. She howled, or maybe yelled, and continued bounding through the mist. The ground beneath her feet was uneven, and she couldn't see the trees coming at her through the fog, so their branches tore at her fur no matter how quickly she changed course. She was acutely aware of how slow she was. Why couldn't she speed up time for herself? She was a time witch. Something crashed out of the mist and into her, bowling her over. Her back leg caught on a root, and she yelped, but the teeth snapping at her throat took precedence. She snapped back, writhing to get into attack position. The new complaints from her leg gave her something to center on. She was a wolf, not a human, and she could focus on that. She pushed off the root she'd tripped over and launched herself at her attacker, whom she still couldn't see properly. She caught a mouthful of fur and tugged. A snarl rewarded her. A familiar-sounding snarl, her brain noted, but a pair of clawed swipes followed it, and Maggie only avoided one. Any mental commentary on the fight gave way to sheer survival. Whoever she was fighting, they were good. Clever, and not like any other wolf she'd fought so far. They tussled, Maggie operating almost purely on scent because she still couldn't see. The fog had thickened to pea soup levels. Each wolf landed blows and bites. Maggie held her own for some time, until the pain in her leg stopped being enough to ground her, and everything slipped sideways again. This time, she tried to hold on to the knowledge that if she didn't win this soon and get to Liam, she'd be too late. Keeping that firmly in mind, she attempted to cast a spell on herself, or, failing that, on the other wolf. It was a tiny, quick-time spell, enough to give her a chance to get out of the other wolf's grip, or else throw off the other wolf's flow. It wouldn't work. Her powers wouldn't work. They sparked and shivered, and she felt like she had a fever of 103. Her body rebelled and was uncontrollable, like it was trying to get the infection out with everything it had. She fell back in the cold, slushy mud, panting and rolling helplessly, praying her attacker wouldn't choose that precise instant to go for her throat. The mud turned into tangled bedsheets. She suddenly had two legs, two arms, no paws, and a very insistent brother yelling in her ear, "Maggie! Maggie, for the love of God, wake up!" "I'm awake, damn it!" she snapped, gasping for breath, and shaking her head.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?